Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, happy drive time, everybody. We're the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. I am Molly.
And I am Kim.
And happy Tuesday, everybody.
It's a little warm out there, Molly.
Oh, my gosh. It feels like Arizona.
Yeah, it's warm. We had some warmer there.
Well, you know,
can cook eggs outside in Arizona.
You've been. When you're in Arizona, it feels like a hairdryer is blowing up out of the concrete up at you, and there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
It's pretty hot.
But the pools are nice.
I wouldn't know. I guess so. Yeah. Well, anyway, welcome to Colorado's KDMT Denver's Money Talk Radio. We're the AmeriChicks, and we are American-loving chicks. And we look at the issues that should be on that busy person's radar, because we know you don't have time all day to sit and stare at the TV. And, you know, who would want to? You've got lives. But we bring forward the important issues, and we dissect them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And today we're going to be talking about net neutrality, and we'll be bringing on a specialist from FreedomWorks to talk about that with us in the second and third segment, Patrick Hedger. But for now, if you are driving and getting home from work and you're hungry, kind of like we are, you might be interested in some food. One of my favorite foods, Kim, is Greek food. I love gyros with tzatziki sauce. What do you like?
I love lamb chops.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the best lamb chops in town, we know where they are.
We know where they are. You know the DTC Landmark. It's a really cool area. You've got all kinds of little shops and the comedy place
club,
there,
yeah.
Your comedy club there. But Yanni's is our favorite restaurant. And Yanni has been a really great partner with the AmeriChicks. And so we wanted to bring him on and ask him a little bit about what's going on over at Yanni's Greek Restaurants, talk about the specials and what's going on so
this
that
summer,
we have some places to go this summer. So, Yanni, welcome to the AmeriChicks. He's shaving up that lamb.
He's cooking lamb chops. While we're waiting for that, Molly, let's just very quickly, there's been on current events, Syria has been on your mind. So let's talk about that very quickly before they find Yanni.
Yeah, it has. Well, as you know, things have been going on a lot recently over there. But, you know, Sunday, the U.S. shot down a Syrian jet. Then Monday, we had a near-miss collision with a Russian fighter jet, just about 5 feet apart.
That's pretty close.
It looked like we went really, really, really close near the Baltic Sea, and they were loaded and ready to go. And then also, we've just got news that the U.S. has just shot down an Iranian drone in Syria. And this is the second one in a month that we shot down. Their drones were near our coalition, and it was armed and ready to shoot our people.
This drones, this is all new stuff with drones.
It's all new stuff, but it's also, it's really hard. You know, when you think about the fighting over in the Middle East, you know, we say we're coming together for a common cause to fight ISIS, but it's got to be really hard to tell who's with you and who's not. It seems like there's the U.S. coalition versus Syria, Russia, and Iran who are together. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard. There's blurred lines to know who's your friend, who are you fighting with, who's your enemy. And when somebody gets that close to you and you're not quite sure and they have guns aimed at you, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, in World War II, our guys have said that the enemy had different uniforms. Like you say, it's harder to tell these days.
Yeah.
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 So, hey, I understand that we now have Yanni on the line. Hey, Yanni, how are you doing?
Well, how are you?
Well, we're great. And we were just talking about the lamb chops at Yanni's Greek restaurant there in the Landmark. And we thought we wanted to bring you on. And you've got just such a great ambiance there, especially in the summer. So what's going on there, Yanni?
What's going on? Well, you know what? We're celebrating what we call our Greek Summer Fest. And it just started this week. And what we do is from 4:30 to 6:30, we do $3 appetizer and $4 draft beers and $4 house wines.
Nice.
And that just started today, and it goes for 2 months.
I like it. Now, is it 7 days a week, Yanni?
It's Tuesday through Friday.
Tuesday through Friday. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. 4:30 to 6:30.
And you've got that great little open area just out front of the restaurant as well. I mean, people must love that normally, too.
Yeah. bad. They sit out on the patio and just enjoy the beautiful Denver summers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're talking with Yanni with Yanni's Greek Restaurant in the DTC Landmark area. He also, you have, Yanni, an area for groups to go. I know that we've gone there with some different groups to just sitting down and having meetings together as well. Is that something that people need to call ahead for, or is that just available for walk-ins?
Yeah, we have a little private dining room that can hold up to about 35 people.
Okay. Now, Kimmy loves the pork chops and
the lamb chops.
The lamb chops, and mm-hmm. I love your gyros. What else is kind of a big hit down there?
Oh, my gosh. Our seafood is also quite the attraction. We've got wonderful fresh octopus and calamari and whole red snapper and sea bass.
Oh, man. I think I'm going to leave. Molly, you can take it from here. I'm going to head on over to Yanni's in the Landmark. So, well, Yanni, thank you so much. And you have been such a great partner with us. We so appreciate it. And, you know, for the best lamb chops in town, go to Yanni's in the Landmark.
Well, girls, thanks for the call and have a great day.
Okay. You too.
Keep up the great work on that great show you have.
Okay. Thanks, Yanni.
Yeah,
he is just a great guy.
He's a great guy. You get stuck in that traffic, and everybody's stuck on traffic right now.
Just pop off here for their summer fest.
Pop off. It's right over there by you get off of the Papados exit. It's Bellevue. Mm-hmm. Get off of that exit. Yep. Yanni's Greek Restaurant.
Yeah, it's on the west side of I-25. And and actually you could listen to the Americhicks and sit out there on the patio and have some appetizers and a glass of wine and just let the traffic disseminate.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Yanni's a small business owner, and we know how hard that is. And I know that a lot of the people that listen to Denver's Money Talk Radio actually are entrepreneurs themselves. And so you know how hard it is to really take that idea from a napkin idea, that dream in your heart, and actually put the money behind it and put the marketing strategy
and
all that.
And the dreams.
And you know, in restaurants, there's such a very small profit margin. But it's where a lot of young people really kind of cut their teeth and get their skills ready to go, mm-hmm. and give them some experience to put on the resume and get going. And then the food there is just absolutely delicious. So we're just very thankful for all of our sponsors that partner with us. And we know that you're all business owners just like we are. And we know that if you've got that dream in your heart, you can do it. Sometimes it just helps to hear about somebody else who did something like that. So we're here to encourage you as well. And if anybody out there listens to our show and you have a small business that you'd like to promote, let us know. We're the Americhicks. .com, and we're also the Americhicks on Facebook as well. Reach out to us. The phone number, if you want to talk to us today, we are going to be talking about burdensome regulations that may be rolled back soon, and starting with net neutrality. So the phone number here at KDMT is 303-632-4160. We'd like to know what regulations you think might be needed to be rolled back to get your business up and running. So stick with us. If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our Americhicks referral list at americhicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender. Sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the Americhicks sent you.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The Americhicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes. Oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. You are listening to KDMT 1690 AM. A great discussion that we're going to have today on net neutrality. It's something that is really important for freedom and liberty. So we've got somebody on the line, Patrick Hedger. He is the Foundation Program Manager at FreedomWorks Foundation. And he looks at all these rules and regulations on a consistent basis. And I think it's important, listeners, to understand that we have been moving away from a representative government. We've been moving away into a bureaucratic, administrative, compliant government, and where these rules and regulations are put in by unelected officials who are no longer accountable to us. So something so interesting has happened now that President Trump is in office is many of these things were put in place via executive order, which means that they can be taken out via executive order and also with rules and regulations. So, Patrick Hedger, this is Kim and Molly. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about yourself?
We're doing well.
Great, thanks.
Actually, Patrick, this is something that has been on my radar for a long time, net neutrality. Would you explain to our listeners what net neutrality is exactly?
Well, I think it's first important to make the distinction between the principles of net neutrality and the policy of net neutrality. So the principles of net neutrality are the idea that your internet service provider, so basically whoever you're paying your cable bill to every month, is not going to decide which content you can access, is not going to purposefully slow down content you're trying to access, or try and give themselves a competitive advantage by slowing down a competitor's website or something like that. So that's the principle of it. Unfortunately, the policy implementation of net neutrality that occurred under the Obama administration amounted to basically a nationalization of the internet, reclassifying internet service providers as public utilities instead of basically the normal private company regulation that we have right now. And that reclassification is very important, and it's reclassifying them. You might hear the term Title II under the Communications Act. That basically gives the FCC the power to set prices, regulate practices, basically control these internet service providers through executive fiat. So that's, you know, we're not against net neutrality necessarily in principle. If that's something a company wants to do, that's fine. But we're against the government micromanaging internet service providers like we are against the government micromanaging any other industry.
So the Obama administration put in place these new rules and regulations regarding net neutrality, but something is happening in Washington now, and it's kind of under the radar. So what is going on?
Well, I wish it was a little more under the radar. We're getting a lot of pushback from folks like John Oliver, a lot of progressive comedians that, frankly, are, I think, pretty misguided on this issue. But what's happening is now that President Trump is the president, Republicans control the majority on the FCC now. And what FCC Chairman Ajit Pai and his Republican colleagues have done is reverse this Title II classification to say, look, this was completely unnecessary. This was a solution searching for a problem, basically bringing a bazooka because you thought you saw a fly in your house. I mean, it was just such a huge power grab and open, and it gave the FCC almost limitless power to set prices, regulate practices, and things like that. And so what people need to realize is that we have a government official, a head of an agency right now, and it's Ajit Pai that says, I don't want this much power. The FCC should not have this much power. And I think we should be pretty thankful that we finally have somebody in Washington that's willing to say, this is way too much power for somebody in Washington to have.
Patrick Hedger with the FreedomWorks Foundation, quick question, because I really haven't been paying that much attention on what's changed in the pricing, I guess, of you know, the internet service providers over the past several years. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between what we had before President Obama came in 2015, started Title II, what the pricing was like before and after, and how that kind of may have changed?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because one of the main things that we said arguing against reclassifying the internet as a public utility and so against net neutrality as public policy was the internet wasn't broken. The internet service provision expanded wildly from 1996 up until 2015. I mean, we had a massive expansion of high-speed broadband. You saw basically the internet as we know it today came about because of light touch, what we call light touch or light-handed regulation by the Federal Trade Commission, not the Federal Communications Commission. So we already had all these consumer protections. The pricing angle is that the FCC, when they reclassified the internet as a public utility, just gave themselves the power to start regulating prices. Now that we haven't seen that they've done that to a large extent, but one of the first things they did after reclassifying the internet as a public utility was basically saying that internet service providers couldn't charge certain companies more to provide their content on the internet. So they couldn't charge a Netflix or a Google or Facebook or any other website content provider different prices. But the problem with that is that's like telling somebody that owns a toll booth that they can't charge more for a semi-truck than a sedan or a motorcycle. The fact of the matter is those companies like Netflix and Amazon and all these other big, huge websites that people go to use a disproportionate amount of the internet traffic. And they were the reason they were advocating for this policy change and are trying to fight us now is because they want the government subsidy. They don't want to have to pay any more than any other website.
Yeah, well, I think that makes sense, Patrick. If you want something customized for you personally, you want the opportunity to go sit down one-on-one and put together a contract with the provider based on your particular needs. And it's you get kind of customized service that way. And we all love that because it gives us more options and more choices. And, you know, Patrick Hedger, basic economics, the more you regulate or tax, the less you get. And you know, I'd ask you about the prices, but you're right. As soon as they start regulating more, eventually the prices are going to have to go up because what do you do when you regulate more? You've got to hire people to go in there and regulate.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you've got these companies that, you know, people were scared of the large ISPs, so really the biggest companies out there. And the reason that they pushed for net neutrality was to try and check these companies. But it was what we've seen over the course of history, dating all the way back to the late 1800s in the railroads and the Interstate Commerce Commission of the ICC, is that when you begin regulating industries as public utilities, what happens is that the smaller competitors tend to get crushed by the regulatory burden. They don't have the lawyers or the accountants to be able to deal with this stuff. But the big guys do. And so what happens is when you regulate these industries, you create basically a big sandbox that nobody else can get into and that only the big guys that can hire the lobbyists and lawyers can play around in. So that's problematic. And again, it's sort of the unintended consequence of reclassification as a public utility.
Yeah. And again, that's going to take away more of our choices. And as we know, big government loves big business, and they need each other to survive. And we don't want that. We want those small companies.
Now, Patrick Hedger with FreedomWorks, you had mentioned that there were some comedians out there that were really getting some traction regarding this issue. And in doing some research on net neutrality, when this was put out, there's a time where there could be public comment. And back when this was put in place, my understanding is that the public was not able to comment on this for a variety of reasons, even though they were supposed to. But now with public comment on whether or not to roll back this net neutrality rules and regulations, that there's comedians out there encouraging their watchers to go out and weigh in on this. It's astonishing to me to say, we want government to have more power. We want government to continue to regulate things and to make, as you mentioned, Molly, make them more expensive. And less of it. So what should people be doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, what they should be doing is they can go to our website or they can go to netfreedomforever.org or .com. I believe we have both. And that'll redirect to a site that FreedomWorks has where people can submit comments saying they don't support a government takeover of the internet, that they support free markets, and that they support what the current Trump FCC is trying to do by deregulating the internet. So netfreedomforever.org or freedomworks.org, they should be able to find a link to when we'll collect your comment. We'll take it to the FCC for you to push back on this. But what's so ironic about some of these comedians, and particular one in particular, John Oliver on HBO, was the big kind of driver on this, is that HBO exists as a paid premium data streaming into your home. And what he's advocating against is not allowing that on the internet. So it's just a really weird place for him to put his soapbox on this issue for saying that there shouldn't be fast lanes or slow lanes or paid premium content on the internet, where that's exactly where his show is on HBO in terms of cable.
It is truly astonishing. It's just astonishing. Patrick, I have something I want to throw out to you. This is Kim here, and I spent 4 years on city council of one of the cities here. And 2 months and this was back in August of 2012. I'd just been on the council for 2 months. And we got something. It was a memorandum that was to convert the Greater Metro Telecommunications Consortium, GMTC, from an intergovernmental entity to a nonprofit called Colorado Communications Utility Alliance. And it was astonishing to me because they wanted to convert, because they said that they could expand their scope and reach, they would become an educational advocacy group, they could grow financially, and they would not have to do an audit. And that just raised all kinds of flags for me. But it's gone on to be very successful because all these jurisdictions pay a membership fee. The attorney that is the attorney for CCUA, Colorado Communications Utility Alliance, is also a guy who has been promoting jurisdictions to go out and start municipal broadband. And I was always uncomfortable with jurisdictions doing that because that's not really their business, and they would be competing with private enterprise. But in Colorado, what we're seeing is cities and municipalities are voting that they want to take over municipal broadband. Have I given you enough information to make a comment yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on the issue of municipal broadband, again, you know, a lot of policies out there the biggest problem we face on pretty much every economic issue out there is that one side governs on intentions, and that's pretty much the left, and the right tries to govern on outcomes. And while the intent of a municipal broadband system is generally very good, you look at any sort of government, quasi-governmental entity or enterprise, and they're generally not very profitable. A recent study that came out, and I can't remember exactly where it was published, but it came out looking at the financial stability of the major municipal broadband networks all across the country. And what they're finding is a lot of them won't be profitable like well into the 2040s and 2050s. So while they might be able to provide a nice service for that local community, what people need to realize is that if they're not using the municipal broadband, they're subsidizing the people who are. A lot of these companies are operating at a loss that's compensated by tax revenue. It comes back down to who has better incentives facing them, the government or the companies. And this goes all the way from municipal broadband up to the issue we're talking about with net neutrality. Who's better at regulating markets and managing private networks, private sector or the government? And we don't think the FCC should have the power to regulate networks, and it's generally not. I mean, if states want to do that, I'm all for federalism. Local governments want to do that. People got to realize they're generally being sold a bill of goods on these things.
Yeah. And, you know, Patrick, what's interesting, too, you see that you've got the world's largest tech companies going to D.C. to discuss IT with the government and really share some of their best practices with the federal government, which I think is good because it seems like that this businessman in power that's holding our executive seat seems to understand businesses no better than government. Patrick, hang on with us through the break if you don't mind. We'd like to keep chatting with you.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, June 16th through the 22nd, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Captain Underpants, Wonder Woman, and Alien Covenant. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Please be sure to visit the delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. I'm Kim Munson.
I'm Molly Vogt.
And we have Patrick Hedger on the line with us. He's the Foundation Program Manager at FreedomWorks Foundation. And Molly, he's really a smart guy. He's watching all this regulatory stuff that's going on. And it's really been troubling as we have moved away from a representative government over into bureaucratic, administrative, and compliant. And what is just really refreshing is President Trump and his team are trying to push back and move the move freedom. I would say freedom works right back to the people. So, Patrick Hedger, thank you so much for being with us.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Yeah, net neutrality is what we've been talking about, which in essence, you said in theory had some good reasoning. However, when you look at the real outcomes, you realize that ultimately what it was is a kind of a government takeover of the internet. And we have an opportunity here with the Trump administration that the head of the FCC says, you know, I don't really want that much power. And so we're right now in a commenting period regarding rolling back these regulations. Correct, Patrick?
Yeah, that's correct. The comment period, I believe, is open until July 17th.
Now, I just want to back up with a question. As I was researching for this show, the comment period when these regulations were put in place, there was no comment taken. Is that correct from what I read?
There was comments that were submitted after the rule, I believe, was finalized. Essentially, what happened is that we got an advance this time around with Trump's FCC chairman, Ajit Pai. They gave an advance notice of public rulemaking. So before they even voted on this rule and decided that they were going to propose it and implement it, it was available for the public to read for months. And that didn't happen when the Obama administration did it. It was essentially rammed through at the request of the White House. And even the Democratic FCC chair during the Obama administration initially said, no, this isn't a good idea. And he kind of caved to political pressure that came from the White House. What's interesting about the way the internet was regulated before they decided to try and nationalize it through this public utility regulation is that the law governing internet being deregulated or light touch regulation was bipartisan. The Republican Congress passed it in 1996 and was signed into law by Bill Clinton that said basically the internet should be unfettered by government regulation. And so this was a bipartisan agreement that said, hey, hands off the internet. We know what it's like. We remember when the airlines were regulated. We remember what it was like when the telephone companies were regulated. There was no innovation. And there's no reason that we should apply that to this economic engine of the internet.
Mm-hmm. Now, once again, it seems like that what happened there is they passed it to find out what was in it. That does not seem like a great way to govern. So that's just the second thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, there's a lot of regulations, and this is something the Obama administration did a lot of across the board, was basically just springing regulations in the dead of night or figuring out any way to avoid public scrutiny of them before there was a vote.
Patrick Hedger, then what we are seeing is there, it's taken a long time for this agenda to be put in place. And so now with President Trump rolling these things back, I think that's one of the reasons why he's getting so much pressure and so many attacks and the late night comedians coming after him and everybody coming after him is because when you really peel away what he's doing, Molly and I took a look at his first 100 days, his first 138 days. The guy gets up every day and he is rolling back government and putting more freedom back to the people from what I can see.
You're absolutely right. I mean, just talking regulations in general, I mean, to put it in perspective for your audience, every year you can measure how busy Washington's regulators have been by how long something called the Federal Register is. Last year, the Federal Register was the longest it's ever been at 95,000 pages in the last year of the Obama administration. This year, it's on track to be just under 62,000 pages.
Wow.
While that's still probably a bit too much, the last time it was that short was, I believe, back in 1992. So we've had balanced budgets more recently than the Federal Register will be as short as it is this year. And a lot of the pages in the Federal Register this year are announcements of deregulation. So not that 62,000 pages we're on track for. A lot of that is actually good policy.
Oh, yeah. Well, we love it. Well, remember, like Kim said, you know, we've been doing the Trump's first 100 plus days. And, you know, in the beginning, when he came out with the contract and said he was going to roll back for every new regulation he was going to take out too, and then he was going to go in and all of President Obama's executive orders that were not legal, that were not good, that were not helpful. He was going to get rid of those as well. You know, you're kind of like, yeah, that sounds great, but how in the world is he going to do it? But he really is. And like you mentioned, you know, in 1996 under Bill Clinton, they signed bipartisan regulations really saying that they wanted less regulation on the internet. And I think it shouldn't be a Republican versus a Democrat thing to want more personal freedom. What I think it is, maybe it's just kind of a marketing or a sales issue that we have that some people don't understand, that when you give government more power over everything in your life, then that gives you less choices and it costs more money out of your pocket. And so I love what you guys at FreedomWorks are doing, because you really are going out and educating citizens and then activating them. And that's what we're doing too. Kim and I are, we're trying to shed the light on the truth of how certain policies affect people long term. You know, we know that the government comes in and they want to solve solutions. And unfortunately, they may be coming from the right mindset with the right intention. But when you look overall long term, they end up hurting more than helping. And the free market is able to do things a lot more efficiently and effectively than big government is. So we're glad that this is going to take place. So the FCC chairman's talking about rolling back the overbearing net neutrality rules in the internet. That's awesome.
You know, Molly, I just have to ask Patrick a question on that. Patrick, do you think that there is risk that with all of these people weighing in to try to keep these rules, that this will not be rolled back?
I don't think so. If you look at some of the legal frameworks that govern regulations and these public comment periods, they very clearly state that, you know, the comment period is not an election, right? It's not which side can submit the most versus the other. That's an important aspect, and the agencies certainly do consider those things. But it's really important about that activists on the right get in and submit substantive comments. There's a governing document that came out of regulations.gov that said explicitly one well-supported, unique, substantiated comment can outweigh 1,000 form letters that are submitted by some activist group. So it's not an election. There is certainly pressure on the FCC, but at the same time, there's a lot of pressure coming from the right side of this issue as well, basically saying, look, we've got a long history in this country of when we were regulating industries as common carriers. I mean, you look at the airlines, the railroads, the telephone industry, and all that happened is prices stayed up and innovation was very low, just like you were saying. So I think we've got history on our side, and there's certainly we're trying to drive thousands of comments as well from our activists.
Okay, and where should they put those comments? Again,
I believe it's netfreedomforever.org, or they can just go to freedomworks.org, and there should be a link on our website.
Okay, great. Freedomworks.org. Okay, great.
Now, Patrick, we had you for two segments. I don't know if you have time. In a few minutes, we have a break, but I wanted to ask you about some economics if you have a few more minutes to stick with us.
Happy to do it.
Awesome. Okay, so let's just get started. So I know that you produced research and analysis on domestic economic policy across different range of areas, and you talk a lot about the economy. We are very hopeful that Congress will get something passed here soon when it comes to tax reform. It's been taking a little bit longer than we had hoped, and House Speaker Paul Ryan came out today saying that they are going to have this tax reform finished by the end of 2017. What are your thoughts on that? What would you like to see?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I would direct folks, they can go to freedomworks.org. We have our principles for tax reform up on our website, and we've made these recommendations to the offices that we're in touch with and certainly to leadership as well. But basically, the tax reform is really simple, right? The rates need to be low, relatively flat, and the tax code needs to be for collecting revenue, not micromanaging the economy. And that's the biggest problem that we have right now, is that Congress constantly uses the tax code as a way to tinker with the economy, grant privileges to certain industries or special interest groups. And basically that it's a way of spending money without actually having to cut a check. They call it spending through the tax code. And that's why it takes billions of dollars and millions of man hours every year for Americans just to fill out their taxes, because the tax code is unnecessarily complex with all of these loopholes. So the ultimate point, from my personal opinion, would be to simplify the tax code.
regardless of whatever rates we're at. Obviously, I hope they're lower and flatter. But that, I think, is the number one principle, is that Congress needs to not be able to use the tax code to engineer the economy. This is about collecting revenue to fund the essential functions of government.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, Patrick, with FreedomWorks Foundation. And, you know, we had Brian Dmytrovic on with us several times. He and Larry Kudlow, of course, and Art Laffer had the opportunity to really talk to President Trump while he was a candidate about supply-side economics and about, you know, what really would be necessary to get this economy growing again. And it looks like to us from the first budget he put forward, he has the right idea to get that going in the right manner. What I want to talk about next when we get back from the break, if you don't mind, is your ideas for welfare reform, because those entitlement programs are something that we still, I think, need to figure out and figure out how to message in the right way. So stick with us. We'll be right back with Patrick Hedger.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's free freedom kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your free freedom kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals.
Hey, this is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. We love America, and because of that, we want to make sure that we are always the same awesome, amazing country that people look to for as a light of hope and a beacon of hope. And they know that if they work really, really hard, someday they might be able to become a citizen of America and go after that great American dream. And really, that's just to be able to work hard. You have the opportunity to work hard and chase your dream. There's no guarantee in America, but no matter who you are or where you came from, you can try. And you know, a lot of people that come here, well, I don't know about now, but previously, Kim, when people came to our shores, they were just happy to be here. You know, Helen Riley, you know, she came from China.
She'll be here tomorrow, tomorrow.
She'll be on tomorrow. Mm-hmm. She's had $100 in a you know sewn into her dress, and you've heard stories like that over and over and over. They didn't come for welfare. They didn't come for a handout. They didn't want that. And we've had many people in studio that said they were on welfare at some point and how hard it is to get off. And so what I wanted to ask our guest Patrick Hedger about, and Patrick is the foundation program manager with FreedomWorks Foundation. Patrick, you all have talked about solutions to the problem we have with the welfare programs in America. Do you mind sharing some ideas with us to get people uplifted again and get this economy going?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, we got to look back to some of the bipartisan things that were passed, by a Republican Congress and signed into law by President Clinton in the 90s. One of the most successful legislative changes that's ever come out of Washington was instituting work requirements for welfare. Welfare caseloads dropped in half almost overnight. And what happened, though, when the Great Recession hit, the government basically waived a lot of those work requirements for various states and all of the various welfare programs. I mean, there's a web of dozens and dozens of welfare programs, both state and federal. And a lot of the work requirements that were instituted in the mid-90s were abandoned at the first sight of trouble. And basically, you can't abandon the reforms before they even have a chance to work. So one of the things that we're pushing for is certainly to put strong work requirements, again, on these welfare programs. And that's not saying everyone on these programs needs to have a job, but they need to be looking. Mm-hmm. Or they need to be in job training, or they need to prove that they're trying to get off of these programs. The other thing we need to do is to restructure the program so that when somebody does get a sustainable job, that the welfare programs aren't able to pay them more than their job is.
Mm-hmm.
Combined welfare programs in a lot of states pay more than the starting level salary of very, you know, respectable professions, computer engineering, things like that. And that really shouldn't be the case, because what you do is create a poverty trap. If you can make more money just sitting at home and not trying looking for a job, collecting government checks, then that's exactly what you're going to do. If you pay people not to work, that's what they're going to do. And I don't necessarily blame anybody that's on these programs for not pursuing work if they're going to make more money without having a job.
So, Patrick, what we have in place then is government policies that actually reward, as you mentioned, not working. And what it is, I think it's a real assault on the middle class. And one of the great things about the American idea is a robust middle class. So you could take a look at education, college loans. You know, the wealthy are going to be able to send their kids to college. And then kids that get assistance for college loans, you know, if it's based on need, the people on the bottom rung of the economic ladder can get loans. But those people in the middle, they're the ones that actually have to pay full fare. And I think that it really penalizes them for trying to, you know, pay their own way and succeed and become a thriving middle class.
Well, you bring up a great point, especially with talking about these programs backfiring and then also the issue of student loans. Is what we're finding that the government subsidizes student loans for anyone that, you know, middle class or lower class in this country. And what a study out of the New York Fed found is that for every dollar of subsidized federal loan guarantees, tuition in this country goes up by 60 cents. So while the government may be trying to help kids go to college, when they're giving them subsidized loans at discounted interest rates and things like that, all it's doing is fueling tuition increases at these schools. And now you see professor salaries average well into the six figures. Administrative salaries, administrative positions have exploded. Administrative salaries have exploded. You're seeing all these colleges with luxury dorms and water parks. And the quality of the education hasn't gone up. And that's a real shame. And you see a lot of the same thing with these welfare programs where, I mean, the war on poverty, since it began, you know, during the Great Society in the 1960s, spent over $22 trillion. Right? At the time, it would have been cheaper to cut everybody below the poverty line a check for close to $1 million. And yet we still have a rampant problem of poverty in this country. And so, again, we can't keep governing on intentions, and we can't govern – and look at these programs and judge them by how many people are on them or how much money they're spending as if that's the solution. What we should be doing is judging how much less we need to spend each year because so few people actually need the program. That's the outcome that we really need to be looking at. We simply just need to change the goals.
Now, Patrick, when you're talking about $22 trillion in this war on poverty, that money went somewhere. And as you really look at it, if in fact you were doing a job well and paid, you know, spent that much money, then you would work yourself out of a job. There would be no poverty. There would be no homelessness. But in essence, there are people there that are at the trough with the intention. They say the intention is to solve these problems. But instead, there are people that are getting wealthy off of the issue of poverty and homelessness.
Right, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of that is you look at what's happening. I'm here in the Washington, D.C. area. And 6 out of the 10 richest counties in this country surround this city, a city that has no natural harbor, doesn't produce anything. It simply is a center of government, and it's one of the wealthiest cities in the country, if not the wealthiest city. And part of that is the lobbyists that are here and the industries that are trying to pursue favor. But a lot of that is that we have a huge federal labor force that administers these programs, make very good salaries and very good livings. And you're wondering, wait a minute, why are we paying, you know, thousands upon thousands of bureaucrats to administer these programs instead of leaving that money with the states or leaving that money with the businesses? As Ronald Reagan said, the best way out of poverty, I'm paraphrasing here, is a good job for anyone who's willing to work, because that's a sustainable way out of poverty. That's not taking from someone. That's generating value. I'm all for having a safety net for the people that need it. But at the same time, what we've done is we've kind of created a hammock that is trapping people in poverty. And basically, like you said, you look at the incentives of the people that administer these programs. They're not going to regulate themselves out of a job, or they're not going to perform themselves out of a job. They don't really have an interest. They just have an interest in seeing that the checks come in, they take a haircut off the top for themselves, and then the checks go back out. And that's a really poor way to run an anti-poverty system.
You know, Patrick, you made me think of something. I've been thinking about this a lot. Dennis Prager said something about a cut flower society or a cut flower prosperity. Out here in Denver, people drive around. They say, "Oh, we have all of these building cranes," but a lot of these cranes are there because government has kind of picked winners and losers. The big guys have been getting sales tax share backs. They've been getting incentives, you know, all kinds of things like that, where the little guy over here is paying full fare. And I submit to you that a cut flower prosperity where government is picking winners and losers is not sustainable. Now, I'm setting that up. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's a problem that we refer to either as cronyism, crony capitalism, corporate welfare. And it's a rampant problem. I mean, it's what I was talking about earlier in the tax code. You also look at all of these farm subsidy programs that we have. If I had to ballpark it, at least three quarters of the federal government, including a lot of, unfortunately, defense spending, is corporate welfare, right? We're subsidizing these large companies that are able to, instead of compete on Main Street, they compete on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
That's where Congress and then these agencies get to decide. You get to succeed. You get to have a lower tax rate. And everybody else is going to pick up the rest of the tab. That's not fair, and that's not right, because, I mean, when the government steps in and decides which industries are going to be successful, which products we're going to produce and subsidize, and which ones we're going to encourage people to buy through the tax code, you're only a few steps away from outright central planning that we saw during the Soviet Union, right? Because you have the five-year plans out of the Soviet, the Soviet government that said, we're going to produce X amount of shoes, X amount of tractors, things like that. And you're not that far removed from it when you have planners in Washington deciding which companies in Denver are going to be successful based on the tax code. And that's really problematic because you run into the problem of central planning and the knowledge problem, something that economist F.A. Hayek talked about, Ludwig von Mises, and they argued for decades that central planning does not work. And they were eventually proven right when the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc outright collapsed. Mm-hmm. And so I don't understand why we would want to replicate that.
Well, and it's not just Washington. You can see that in every level of government, where you start to see politicians and bureaucrats give one guy a special deal and another guy not. And it happens local, county, state, and federal. And we as citizens need to start to pay attention, because a cut flower society is not, it's a faux prosperity. And we need to make sure that we get back to the principles that has made the American idea so great for every individual. So final thoughts, Patrick Ledger, this has been just a great conversation. We'd love to get you back again soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. And I would just encourage people to keep an eye on what's going on in the federal regulatory process. Don't be distracted by all of the drama or flashy headlines coming out of Washington right now. The real business is being done in the agencies. And there's a lot of good things that are happening at the executive level as far as paring back the bipartisan problem of regulations that has been growing really since, you know, the 1930s. And we really have a historic opportunity over the next four and hopefully 8 years to begin to turn the tide that we've never had before. I mean, under Reagan, under Bush, either Bush, we haven't had this opportunity like we have now. And I would just encourage people to stay in touch with the FreedomWorks Foundation, and we'll keep you informed as far as what regulations are coming up for review.
Well, Patrick Hedger, thank you so much. You're with the FreedomWorks Foundation. It's been a great conversation.
Yep. Thanks, Patrick.
Molly, I find it astounding. He said the Federal Register was 95,000 pages last year, and it's going to be about 62,000 this year.
Nice.
That is really encouraging.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Roll back those regulations. Cut the fat. And what does that mean? More money in our pockets, yours and mine.
Thrive,
and all of our friends,
prosper.
And more opportunity to go out there and just live your dream. Start a business. Create something of value somebody wants to buy.
You got it. So, hey, Ronald Reagan said, we must not look to government to solve our problems. Government is the problem.
Yes, they are. This is the AmeriChicks signing off. We'll see y'all tomorrow, 5 p.m.
High school can be so